Merry New Year, White Sox fans. Happy Saturday, January 3rd, 2026.
Merry New Year!
Yes, it is a Merry New Year indeed, I believe, if you're a White Sox fans. The one thing as I was prepping for today's show, thinking about what I wanted to discuss with all the White Sox fans out there, was when a new year hits, I think it's always about reflection and a look ahead at where you are, maybe as an individual, but as a sports fan, it's also a good time to take stock of where your favorite team is at. And I think that's why I am feeling overwhelmingly positive right now today as a White Sox fan, because thinking back on just a short year ago, the beginning of 2025, and where the White Sox organization was at after having a historically awful season. I think everybody would agree that it was an absolute nightmare for the 2024 season. And for the White Sox to have revamped the roster, improve the win total by 20 games in 2025, and now to kind of look across and see where they're at as an organization health-wise, there's no denying that you have to feel very, very good when you put it into that context. And that's not to dismiss the fact that the White Sox still have a long way to go. And I think Chris Getz and everybody inside Will Venable, everybody inside the White Sox organization has been honest, if you'll listen to them throughout, that even though I think 2025 was a success put into those contexts, that it was not ultimately a success if you look at it on its individual basis, because 60 wins is not enough for a baseball team. But when you look at it again in the terms of where they were at as an organization, I don't think you can deny they have definitely made huge strides. And so that's why I am very, very happy about where the team is at entering the 2026 year. And one of the things that stood out to me over these last couple of weeks here, the holiday season, is there is definitely a buzz amongst the White Sox fans that I've been talking to. Munetaka Murakami, the signing that we talked about and spent a great deal of time on in last week's White Sox Weekly, has definitely added a little bit of jolt to the White Sox fan base, because the Japanese slugger, who will be in his age 26 season this year, and there's a lot of ways this can go, but I think ultimately it does feel good for White Sox fans to see their team make a splash in the free agent signing, in the free agent pool. And especially when you consider that the White Sox had to do some work to get a Japanese player to agree to come here, the international signing, where the White Sox have come, not just on the 40-man roster, on the 25-man roster, but as an entire organization, I think what the Murakami signing signals is that the White Sox are not just trying to do it through one avenue. There are multiple ways the White Sox are trying to approach improving the roster, and it feels refreshing to see that the team now is playing in the international waters. And that's something that I'm going to get into a little bit deeper here in the next segment, as the White Sox Director of International Scouting, David Keller, joined Chuck Garfine on his CHSN podcast. They had a great conversation. Chuck always great at what he does, so I wanted to bring that to you. We'll do that here in the next segment. But the Murakami signing definitely, I think, has energized White Sox fans over the holiday season. And then I think it's worth noting, I've gotten almost 5 minutes into the show here, and I haven't even mentioned some of the things that I'm still excited about what the White Sox are doing. And that's what just happened this past week. The White Sox added Jared Kelnick as a non-roster invitee to their 40-man roster. And Jared Kelnick is going to be in his age 26 season this year. And if you're a baseball fan, you're probably somewhat familiar with the name, but maybe you're not completely familiar with the history of Jared Kelnick. And I'll try and give that to you a little bit here. Now, Kelnick was selected sixth overall in the 2018 draft by the New York Mets out of Waukesha West High School in Wisconsin. And he was an elite prospect who was, for the most part, one of the, I think, the centerpiece in a blockbuster trade back in December of 2018 between the Mariners and the Mets, when the Mets sent Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz primarily for Jared Kelnick, along with some others. But Kelnick was kind of the key player in the trade. Of course, the Mariners were trying to offload Robinson Cano's contract. And Kelnick, though, was the key piece going back to the Mariners. Love the fact that even though right now Kelnick hasn't had a great deal of success in his major league career, he does have the strong pedigree. I love bets like this. I don't know if Jared Kelnick is going to spend a great deal of time on the major league roster for the White Sox in 2026. I don't think anybody does at this stage. But I love the bet on a player who's in his mid-20s who has that pedigree that Jared Kelnick had. Back in 2020, Kelnick was rated as MLB.com's 11th best overall prospect in all of baseball. He was obviously inside the Mariners' top five overall prospects before he eventually debuted. He did debut back in 2021, early that season in May. And like most rookies, Kelnick struggled to kind of get his footing at the major league level. Ultimately, Jared Kelnick had to revitalize his major league career with the Braves. He moved on, was traded, and dealt away to the Braves, where this is why I am somewhat intrigued by what Kelnick could bring to the White Sox in 2026. Because, and I'll admit that it was only 1 month for Jared Kelnick, but in 2023, after several somewhat disappointing major league seasons, Kelnick finally had a pretty solid spring training and had an opportunity to play for the Atlanta Braves, primarily because, remember, Ronald Acuna was injured and was not available to the Atlanta Braves at that time. So Kelnick had an opportunity to get regular playing time, and he actually did do a good job of claiming a spot for the Braves that season. And in 2023, April of 2023, he seemed to unlock something. And I will say, there's always a, for baseball players, there can always be, you know, hot stretches. But I remember, because it was the start of the season too, I think it always helps when a player has a good stretch during the beginning of the season, because it does shine through a little bit more than maybe just a hot stretch in the middle of the season, because you haven't seen any numbers accumulate yet. And what happens is, oh, all of a sudden, if a guy gets off to a good hot start for an extended period of time, the numbers kind of pop on the stat page if you're checking the box scores on a day-to-day basis. And that is really what happened for Jared Kelnick in his first month in 2023, when he had regular playing time with the Braves. He hit 308 with the 366 on base, and he homered seven times in 26 games. Stole five bases as well without being caught. And he slugged 615, so that's a 982 OPS for a sizzling month in April in 2023. Now, ultimately, I cannot tell you where things went awry for Jared Kelnick. And this is partially why he was available for the White Sox to sign here. But it's interesting to me to see a player have some pretty solid success at the major league level for an extended period of time. And Kelnick is, again, only going to be in his age 26 season here. He is a lefty who has the ability to play all three outfield positions. And I do think there is definitely a plus to having that versatility, because throughout his career, Kelnick has played 159 games in center field, 155 in left, and 71 in right. So primarily a left fielder, center fielder. But it's great to have that versatility, especially if you're trying to find your way onto the roster. He's most recently been playing primarily left field, but again, in a pinch, it seems like he would be somebody who could be available in center field for you if needed. And again, I love the bet on the pedigree. I don't know if it ultimately will work out for Jared Kelnick as a member of the White Sox, but a guy who at one point was considered a top 11 prospect in all of baseball, has had some success for a brief period of time at the major league level, and now he has the opportunity to work with Ryan Fuller and his crew inside the White Sox organization. And again, I go back to how I started this segment. The idea that I can say, hey, you know what? I have confidence in the White Sox organization because of what Ryan Fuller has been able to show us, his work with a lot of the White Sox hitters over this past season. And also, hey, it's not just on the hitting side. I think most fans prior to Ryan Fuller's arrival were very excited, I have been, about what Brian Bannister has been able to accomplish in his time with the White Sox as their director of pitching. So all of a sudden now it starts to feel like the White Sox are an organization where I can give them the benefit of the doubt when they make a signing like this on a reclamation project and dream of the possibility of maybe the White Sox being the organization that ultimately can unlock a player's talent. And so, you know, it's moves like this, maybe they're on the margins, but nevertheless, we see it all the time in baseball. Players who were once highly touted prospects get an opportunity in a different organization where maybe they get some different coaching, and all of a sudden things just click for them. And so I was really excited when I saw the White Sox add Jared Kelnick to the roster this season. Again, ultimately, maybe it doesn't amount to anything, but I feel really good in 2026 where I can see the White Sox make a move like this on the periphery and say to myself, you know what? That might work out, and this is the reason why. And, you know, Kelnick, again, I mentioned his ability to play center field. Another thing I'm encouraged by, I don't know how it will ultimately work out, but as we see more and more free agent signings come in through around Major League Baseball and see a team like the Cincinnati Reds add a couple of outfielders to their team here, it's looking more and more likely that Luis Robert will be the White Sox opening day center fielder. And maybe that won't be the case, but I truly do think that the White Sox having Luis Robert in center field is a good thing for the organization as a whole. Something I've talked about quite a bit here is the fact that having Luis Robert in center with the young pitching staff that the White Sox have assembled, it gives the pitchers on the mound a little bit of that easy feeling, knowing that they have confidence in the guy in center field is going to be able to run virtually anything down. And that even when he has his struggles at the plate, like Luis Robert Jr. has had over a couple of years now, having his Gold Glove caliber glove in center field is a huge boom to the White Sox pitching staff. And so I'm hopeful that he will be on the roster when the season begins, because to have him along with Mooney Murakami in the lineup and the continued ascension, hopefully, of players like Kyle Teal and Colson Montgomery, and maybe even, you know, some more improvement from Miguel Vargas, all of a sudden it feels like the White Sox organization is definitely moving in the right direction. And all of that is kind of discussing the White Sox every day nine. I really didn't even delve into the pitching staff, which, again, looks like there's a great deal on the way as well. And that's something I'll hit on a little bit later in the show. But up next, I do want to share with you, as I mentioned, that conversation between David Keller, the director of international scouting for the White Sox, and Chuck Garfine, who had him on his podcast on CHSN. So I'm going to share that coming up with you here next in a moment. But before we do that, we'll take a quick timeout. And I do want to mention to the White Sox fans out there that don't forget, Sox fans, become a Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free right to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, when we come back, we'll let you hear from David Keller on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Happy holidays, White Sox fans. Celebrate this offseason with the perfect gift for family and friends. A White Sox Holiday Flex Pack starting at just $66 and redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2026 season. To learn more and purchase, visit whitesox.com/holidaypacks. I am Jeff Meller, and this is White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I mentioned that there was a lot of buzz, at least for me, when I was talking to White Sox fans over the holidays, primarily stemming from the addition of Muni Murakami. And I wanted to share with you this conversation between Chuck Garfein, the pre- and post-game host on CHSN for White Sox games. You see him and hear him there on CHSN before all of your White Sox coverage, along with Ozzie Guillen. And Chuck, of course, hosts the White Sox podcast by CHSN. And the day that the White Sox introduced Munetaka Murakami to the assembled media, Chuck had an opportunity to speak with White Sox Director of International Scouting David Keller, who, of course, played a critical role in helping the White Sox land the lefty slugger, who I think will primarily slot in the middle of the order at probably mostly first base and DH. And David Keller, who was signed a little over a year ago to kind of revamp the White Sox international scouting process, and I do think he's done an absolutely great job kind of reshuffling where the White Sox are at. And something he'll touch on is it's good to see the fruits of the labor that the White Sox have been, you know, putting in now finally come to fruition. And that's something he'll mention with Chuck here. But first and foremost, he started about how big of a deal it was for the White Sox to be able to land Murakami and just who deserves the credit.
A ton of credit goes to Chris and Jerry and the rest of our baseball crew. I think it's a very impactful signing. The opportunity to add somebody like Muni and his potential impact from a power perspective is immeasurable, and think that can do great things for our lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you're someone who has your sights set on baseball outside of America. Can you describe, as someone who's been scouting in Japan, who he is, what he is, what does Muni represent?
Yeah, so Muni represents a lot. I think it's fair to say that he's one of the most popular players in Japan at the moment, outside of Shohei Ohtani and some others. But at least last year in the MPB, he was one of the most popular figures within the game and within the culture. And you know, I think today everyone got to see a glimpse of who Muni is as a person. And that's one of the things that has me most excited, not only for our clubhouse and for Will and the coaching staff and our team, but also for the city of Chicago. He's an A-plus human being. He's got a tremendous work ethic, a desire to get better and really prove to himself and to others that he belongs here and is going to be an impactful player.
Yeah, he seems to have a lot of confidence and belief in himself, right?
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that? Because even in his opening press conference, he wanted to convey, he just wanted to show up and sign on the dotted line and speak some words. He really wanted to send a message to his new fans in Chicago, and he did it in a very fun way.
Yeah, I think, you know, getting the opportunity to watch him in person for the last several years, that confidence shows up day in and day out on the field. And his self-belief, I think, is something that we find as a common character trait amongst a lot of really talented individuals and players. And I'm excited to watch that confidence play out over the course of the summer here in Chicago.
How would you describe his power? Because that's what he's known for.
Yeah, so in scouting, we use the 20 to 80 scale, right? And I think that most evaluators would agree that his raw power, how far he can actually hit the baseball, is at the top of the scale. It's 80 grade raw power. The amount of contact that he makes will obviously lead to production, but we have every reason to believe that he's going to adjust and adjust well in time and produce at a high level.
The comps are crazy. You know, the range of comps. I mean, this is just on the internet. You see, yeah, he's a Japanese Babe Ruth. Kyle Schwarber, Joey Gallo, Mike Zunino. What's he going to be? What do you think he can be?
I think he's going to be Mooney. I think it's hard to identify and evaluate outliers. Mm-hmm. And in certain ways, that's what Mooney is. But again, we're betting on the makeup of the player. Who he is as a person, in addition to the talent and the success that he's already had, which is quite prolific in Japan, and excited to watch him adapt and showcase his talent here.
Yeah, the knock on him, if you want to call it that, is the swing and miss. There are a lot of strikeouts, but there's a lot of, I mean, Schwarber, Otani, they strike out a ton as well. What can be done to improve on that when he's facing better pitchers in the States?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, with great power, you usually sacrifice some contact. The amount of contact that you sacrifice will ultimately determine what type of player and contributor he is here. It's one of those things where I think watching him, and I'll leave this to Will and his staff and Ryan Fuller and our hitting group, who are very talented at what they do. But in watching him over the years, what I've noticed is he has a very traditional Japanese style setup. And I think there's some things that we've already talked about and identified internally that I'll let them speak about more specifically that we believe will help him adjust quickly.
So behind the scenes, when you guys were courting him, scouting him, and then eventually signing him, what was your role behind the scenes?
Yeah. So behind the scenes, I think initially I've said a number of times that talented players can come from anywhere. And so when I took this position with the White Sox, obviously identified the Pac Rim as a place where we wanted to establish a presence. We were fortunate enough to get approval to hire a MPB scout. His name's Satoshi Takahashi. Brought him on board, and obviously he and I collaborated on players that could potentially come over not only this year, but in subsequent years. And then we went to work, and that's a collective effort, right? That's me and Satoshi going to see those players live and in person. That's working with our R&D department, Matt Grabowski and Zach Jones and a ton of other talented folks, looking at the numbers and trying to come up with an analytical evaluation. And it's collaborating with Ryan Fuller and Brian Bannister when we talk about pitchers, right? So that we can accurately evaluate the player, assign value, and then give that information to Chris so that he can do his job to try and get to deals like this one.
So when you signed with the White Sox, you yourself, you know, was Mooney already on your radar? Like, hey, this is a guy who, if he gets posted, we got to go after him?
So that's a great question. He was on the radar.
Okay.
Because we knew that he was planning to come over. Mm-hmm. To tell you that I thought I would be sitting here with you today and we'd be announcing his signing, establishing a presence, creating relationships, building those relationships to the point where you can capitalize on them takes time. I don't believe I ever thought that it was a realistic opportunity until we started discussing it further and felt like the pieces might fit.
Piggybacking off of that, the pieces, I mean, it's interesting, like, what makes him decide White Sox? Why were the White Sox the right fit? And it seems like there's a lot to that answer. What is your answer to that?
Yeah, so my answer is his, right? I think he's excited by the opportunity to play in Chicago with a lot of talented young players for a team that's on the rise. And, you know, he talked about winning today. I think he wants the opportunity to win, and he wants to be a contributing member to that. And I'm excited to watch him do it.
Yeah, you see all these teams that were rumored to be interested in him, and some of them are playoff contenders already. Mm-hmm. And he says, even though he wants to win, he's like, this is the better fit for me. Why do you think a young team, a hungry team, on the rise is something that he would really be able to perform at max level with?
Yeah, I can't speak to that exactly. Yeah. I really can. I do believe that there is something about our situation that speaks to really highly competitive individuals who maybe they have a chip on their shoulder, maybe they have something that they want to prove. But I think individuals who want to come here and get to work and be a part of something that's bigger than themselves, this place seems to appeal to them. And I know it appeals to me. I think it appeals to a lot of people in our front office and baseball operations group. And I think that speaks to the players.
All right, so Anthony Kay is another guy you guys signed in the offseason. Let's not forget about him. What attracted you to him? What attracted him to the White Sox?
Yeah, so this is, I think, one, I was attracted to Anthony Kay because I was with the Mets when he was in the minor leagues and coming up and had some history with him from the draft. Knew what kind of talent he possessed, and then that was reaffirmed when I had the opportunity to scout in Japan this past summer. And as we evaluated options on the pitching market, he was somebody that fit, right? He's somebody who has starting experience, has experience in the bullpen, can be versatile in that way. He wanted the opportunity to start, and we were a place that could present that opportunity. And for him to be attracted to us, I think that speaks to Brian Bannister. That speaks to the people that we have here that working tirelessly to get the most out of pitchers and players. And I think he found that to be compelling enough to make this a fit for him.
And you say, obviously, you're with the Mets. The Mets were reportedly interested in Mooney as well. Have you heard from any of your former colleagues?
I've heard from a lot of colleagues. I think former colleagues, colleagues from across the game, I think most were very supportive and very excited for not just me personally, but for the organization, because they feel like we're getting a special talent and at a time when we can use his specific skills to really accelerate this process for us.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about the other part of the parts of the world. I mean, we're just focusing on Japan. I know you're trying to build things up specifically in the Dominican Republic. Where do these things stand there, Venezuela, et cetera?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of my time in those parts of the world. And, you know, first and foremost, we had the opportunity to rebuild our entire staff. When I came on board, it was a labor of love, interviewing people, hiring people, takes a lot of time. But we feel like we've been able to complete a really good staff and then institute a system and a process that we felt was thorough and allows us to really evaluate players accurately and more so, lean into a mindset of aggression where we can be flexible and build relationships with trainers and agents from all walks of life and really get to deals. And I think there's a lag time that comes with international scouting, specifically in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and other places. But I'm hopeful and optimistic that over the next several years, you'll start to see some of the hard work that we've been putting in come to fruition.
Again, that was White Sox Director of International Scouting David Keller joining Chuck Garfine on the White Sox podcast, courtesy of CHSN. I'm Jeff Meller here on ESPN 1000, hanging out with you for about another half an hour here. And something I wanted to also bring to your attention, White Sox fans, is not just where the White Sox are at as an organization at the major league level, but just how far they've come in the minor league level as well, which of course is the lifeblood of any successful major league organization, and something that got me very excited over the last couple of days was something that I saw on Baseball America, one of the leaders when it comes to baseball publications regarding minor league systems. And so I'm going to share that with you coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Sox Fest Live returns to the Rimowa Theater, presented by Rates, Blue Moon, and Wintrust. Celebrate the start of the season with music, entertainment, and insider conversations with members of the 2026 Clubhouse on Saturday, January 31st. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. I am Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Hopefully you had a fabulous holiday season. Hopefully you had a great New Year's celebration as well. Hanging out, talking White Sox baseball with you as we do each and every Saturday, even during the off season, getting you caught up on everything you need to know regarding your favorite baseball team. Regarding your favorite baseball team, the White Sox, something that I was excited to see cross my timeline on the socials, which then spurred me to go ahead and listen to their entire podcast on this very topic, was something that Baseball America put out. J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce, hosting the Baseball America podcast, were discussing exactly where minor league systems could be a year from now as we looked ahead and potentially discussing what organization could be the top-rated minor league system. And I don't know if this is a big surprise, but I guess it was somewhat surprising to me that the White Sox were the first organization out of both J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce's mouth when discussing which team could be the top organization a year from now.
Who's going to be the number one farm system in baseball at that time?
I think we both have a similar answer here. So the obvious one to me, I think, is the White Sox. It's a pretty solid system now. It's kind of middle of the 30 systems.
Middle of the pack.
But kind of in that area, I'll say from like maybe 11 to 20, where it's fairly close. And it might be even closer from like 11 to 18, you know, where it's kind of like, who do you like a little bit better? Who's development do you trust a little bit more? So they have some good prospects. They have some pitching prospects that I don't think all of them will graduate. They have a top hitting prospect in Caleb Bonnemer, who I don't believe will graduate unless things go much better than we can even imagine as the biggest Caleb Bonnemer fans outside of his parents.
I was going to say, we're big Bonnemer fans. If he's in the big leagues and graduated this time next year, watch out.
Yeah, exactly. And they have the number one pick. So they have the number one pick. They have all the bonus pool money that goes with that. So they could end up with two, maybe even three prospects. And, oh, by the way, they're going to end up with more than likely, you know, Rock Chalowski, who, for all intents and purposes, is considered one of the best position, college position prospects of the last decade. So even if he's not the number one prospect,
he's a top 10 prospect when he walks in, probably.
He's a top 10 to 15 prospect, exactly. And those guys push systems up quite a bit. We both believe that Bonnemer could be in a similar range. Okay. You know, and then we have some of these other pitchers we talked about in the last show, McDougal, you know, Jaden Fowski, a prep hitter from last year's draft, who's pretty good. Christian Oper.
Billy Carlson is still there, who was a first
Carlson. Exactly. And they always, you know, sign a few international players. So I think there's enough depth here that that's the one that I think I'll throw out there. But I think there's a couple other, you know.
The other key thing I'll say there, the other thing with the White Sox, because we do agree, I think both our first pick is the White Sox, is the other thing is this is the team that will still be acquiring, not trading away at the deadline. Now, we'll see how much they actually have to trade at the deadline, but let's say that they keep Louis Robert and at midseason he's having a good year. That could bring them back some more prospects at the deadline. You're good. Like, there could be other players who they're looking to trade at the deadline. I wouldn't be shocked at all. Like, if they decided, I mean, they've got three catchers right now, and I think that they probably do have a feeling that at some point it's worth deciding which two, because, like, I'm not saying Corey Lee's not like in the Cuero and Teal category, But I do think Corey Lee's probably out of, I think he's out of options now. And if you think that he's a legitimate backup catcher, then it probably is time to move on from, you know, you don't really want to just carry Cuero, Teal, and Lee on your roster. That could be bring back something else again. Like there's Braden Montgomery could still be eligible this time next year. Not ideal if he is, but it wouldn't be stunning if he was. It wouldn't be stunning. I don't think they would be at the same level of prospect, but Noah Schultz or Hagen Smith, one of those may still be eligible this time next year. That's, I think, a good, probably, I would say, most likely prediction.
So there you go. That was, again, J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America discussing a year from now, the White Sox very well could be the top organization when it comes to minor league systems in all of baseball, in their opinion, their expert opinion. So interesting to hear them break down where the White Sox could be at. And, of course, something to keep in mind. I think they did a good job of outlining it there. But when you're looking at a minor league system, you will, you know, a system that can be great one year could quickly become one of the systems that falls to the bottom of the pack with a lot of graduations, right? And when you think about it, looking back at 2025, think about how many players made their debut for the White Sox last season. It seemed like every other week we were reacting to the video of White Sox prospects getting the information that they were being sent up to the big leagues, right? Like, how many times, you know, did I play that video for you on a White Sox pregame show or a White Sox weekly when Kyle Teal was learning? He got the call. Colson Montgomery, hey, man, you're going up to the bigs to debut in Colorado on the 4th of July. You know, Edgar Caro early in the season getting the call up to the big leagues. And on and on and on. It went all season long. Chase Meidroth, right? So many different players for the White Sox graduated to the big leagues last year. And still, now, on January 3rd, 2026, there's conversations that the White Sox are the obvious, or like they would seem to be, at least if you're, you know, the early money line favorite, they seem like the obvious choice when you factor in having the number one overall pick, that they could be the top minor league system in all of baseball next year. So, again, more encouraging news for exactly where this White Sox organization is. You know, we came into 2025 and a lot was made about Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith being the frontline players, the top prospects in the White Sox organization. And despite, I would say, I think most people would probably admit it was a somewhat disappointing year for Schultz and Smith. Now, maybe some people inside the White Sox organization would quibble with me classifying it that way, because both Schultz and Smith were, you know, undergoing a little bit of seasoning, if you will. They were getting a little salt and pepper throughout their minor league careers as they did get that seasoning, trying to establish themselves. And sometimes players need to go through that. And as a couple of, 21-year-olds last year, Schultz and Smith, you know, maybe the White Sox as an organization would say, you know, this is just what it takes. But at the same time, I think most people were hoping that Schultz and Smith might make their debuts at the back end of the season last year. Nevertheless, all the good stuff that happened for the White Sox happened despite the fact that Schultz and Smith did not debut. And even though I think their seasons, at least statistically, maybe didn't live up to what we as White Sox fans were hoping for last year, I still think there's a lot of talent in both of those young men's left arms, and I'm very excited about having Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith inside the White Sox organization, as I still believe both can be frontline starters for the White Sox here in the not-too-distant future. So Schultz and Smith lead the White Sox young core. And then you heard Cooper and Ponce talk about Caleb Bonimer, who had an absolute breakthrough year last season, and I think really showed why so many people inside the White Sox organization are really excited about what he could be. Braden Montgomery, you know, we saw him have a lot of success. Now, he's the one guy they talked about a little bit. I think Brayden Montgomery is probably going to graduate by next year. But nevertheless, you know, that's just, again, all the more reason to be encouraged by where the White Sox are at. He could, when all is said and done, be the prized piece in the Garrett Crochet deal. And I say that knowing how good people feel about Kyle Teal and what he has become. And, you know, I think that ultimately is it will be Kyle Teal and Brayden Montgomery making White Sox fans very okay with the deal that Chris Getz made when he traded away Garrett Crochet last offseason. So you've got Brayden Montgomery potentially on the way, but there's a lot to be excited about. Billy Carlson, the top overall pick, who most scouts said is the best prep high school defensive shortstop they've ever seen. He's now in the system. And, you know, as they mentioned and talked about, potentially a player like Rock Chulowski being added during the summer at the Major League Baseball draft. That could be kind of the final piece to add into the White Sox farm system next year. That could be the reason why we're talking about them having the top farm system next season. So we'll revisit that when we are doing the New Year's White Sox Weekly in 2027. But I was excited to see that Baseball America, again, one of the forefront publications when it comes to talking about minor league baseball and just where organizations are at, had the White Sox as kind of the no-brainer thoughts if you're projecting forward as the obvious choice to be the top organization in minor league baseball next season. So, again, just all the more reason why I'm very, very happy about where the White Sox are at as an organization when we reflect on what exactly the 2025 calendar year was for them. All the more reason why you can be encouraged as a White Sox fan. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. And if you're like me last week, you probably spent quite a bit of time consuming some college football, which led me to start thinking about some former White Sox players that had a great deal of success playing college football in addition to baseball. And I'm going to share that with you coming up next, right here on White Sox Weekly.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. I'm Jeff Meller here, wrapping up White Sox Weekly again every Saturday, hanging out with you, talking White Sox baseball, even during the offseason for an hour with you, usually around 8 to 9 a.m. right here in your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. If you're like me, you've spent a great deal of the last couple of weeks, and the last week especially, watching and consuming college football, which got me to thinking, hey, the White Sox have had a lot of great players in their history, but a lot of those great players also had quite a bit of success playing college football as well, which made me make a list for you, the White Sox fans out there, of the top five White Sox players that also played college football. Now, honorable mentions that did not make the list for me. Got to go with Bib Falk, Hub Hart, and good old Sammy Strang. Because who could forget Bib Falk, Hub Hart, and Sammy Strang playing college football? In fact, who could actually remember? Probably nobody listening, because Hart, Falk, and Strang all played college football near the turn of the century, the 20th century, that is. So you probably have no recollection of those players. Nevertheless, I thought we'd give them an honorable mention. Now, the top five players in White Sox history who also played college football, we got to go with Bill Long, former Major League Baseball pitcher who debuted with the White Sox in 1985, had an extended 4 to 5 year career with the White Sox as primarily a relief pitcher. He also played football in the early 80s for Miami of Ohio. And Bill Long, also noted Moeller High School alum, I do happen to know a former football player who played some high school football at Mueller High School. I just can't think of his name right now. Who was it? Oh, yeah, right. Tom Waddle. That's right. So Bill Long, former White Sox player, also played at high school like Tom Waddle did at Mueller High School in Ohio. Of course, number four, we're going to go with Jeff Samardzija. He, you know, of course, played with the White Sox as a starting pitcher. Well, Samardzija, aside from that one season with the White Sox in 2015, you're probably aware, but in case you're a little bit younger, Samardzija played football at Notre Dame as a wide receiver. Number three, we're going to go ahead and make Frank Thomas number three. Frank, the big hurts. Well, he played football at Auburn as a tight end, although he only played one season there because of foot injury that he suffered in. I think that's probably for the best for White Sox fans because he went on to have a Hall of Fame career, and he did not let pro football get in the way of his Hall of Fame career. How about Josh Fields? He's number two. That's right, the native of Stillwater, Oklahoma. He was a first-team All-American player for Baseball America, and in 2004, when he signed with the White Sox, he was coming off of a ridiculous run as Oklahoma State's starting quarterback. So Josh Fields, number two. And then number one, I mean, this goes without saying, folks, but Bo Jackson, of course, probably the greatest two-sport athlete in professional sports history. Bo Jackson, he's my top former White Sox player who also played college football. That's going to do it for me here on White Sox Weekly this week, folks. But thanks for listening. As always, want to say thank you to Charlie Bevins for producing this week. And as always, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball is Brendan Riley. We'll do it again next week right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.